"He was noble once," said Kalt, "honorable. But now his spirit is wounded, and he walks alone no matter how many follow behind him. Elder, we are creatures inclined to excess in our feelings."
"I had no idea," Ruthen said in a dry tone. "So while you have fled one nightmare, alas, you have found another."
"Your wake is filled with suffering," Nomkala said. "It was an easy path to follow. You cannot cross this desert. No mortal can. A god has died here."
"I know.
But he is not gone."
"I know that too. Shattered into a million fragments, but each fragment lives on, diverse. And there is no hope of ever assembling back into a single form. It's too late, and has been for a long time."
He waved at the flies.
"Mindless, filled with pathetic need, understanding nothing."
He cocked his head.
"Not so different from you, then."
"We do not deny how far we have fallen," said Kalturmano.
Ruthen God's shoulders sagged. He looked down.
"So have we all, Tlani Mas. The suffering here is contagious, I think. It seeps into us, makes bitter our thoughts. I am sorry for my words."
"There is no need to apologize, Elder. You spoke the truth. We have come to you because we are lost. Yet something still holds us here, even as oblivion beckons us with the promise of eternal peace. Perhaps, like you, we need answers. Perhaps, like you, we yearn to hope."
He twisted inside at that, was forced to turn away.
"Pathetic, yield them no pity."
Struggling against tears, he said,
"You are not the first. Permit me to summon your kin."
5 warriors rose from the dust behind him. Uragal the Woven stepped forward and said,
"Now we are 7 again. Now, at last, the House of Chains is complete."
"Hear that? All here now, Fallen One. I didn't think you could get this far. I really didn't. How long have you been building this tale, this relentless book of yours? Is everyone in place? Are you ready for your final doomed attempt to win for yourself whatever it is you wish to win? See the gods assembling against you. See the gates your poison has frayed, ready to break asunder and unleash devastation. See the ones who stepped up to clear this path ahead. So many have died. Some died well, others died badly. You took them all, accepted their flaws, the weak ones, the fatal ones, accepted them and blessed them. And you weren't nice about it either, were you? But then, how could you be?"
He knew then, with abject despair, that he would never comprehend the full extent of the crippled god's preparations. How long ago had it all begun? On what distant land? By whose unwitting mortal hand?
"I'll never know. No one will. Win or fail, no one will. In this, he is as unwitnessed as we are. Adjunct, I am beginning to understand you, but that changes nothing, does it? The book shall be a cipher for all time. A cipher."
Looking up, he found that he was alone. Behind him, the army was struggling to its feet.
"Behold, night is born, and we must walk with it. You had the right of that, Galan."
He watched the burial crew rolling wrapped corpses into the grave pits.
"Who were those poor victims? What were their names, their lives? Does anyone know? Anyone at all?"
"He's not broached a single cask?"
Pors shook his head.
"Not yet. He's as bad off as the rest of us, sir."
Kindly grunted, glanced over at Feridan's sort.
tougher than I'd have expected.
There are levels of desperation, she said, so he hasn't reached the next one yet. It'll come. The question is, what then, kindly? Expose him? Watch our soldiers tear him limb from limb? Does the adjunct know about any of this?
I'm going to need more guards, said Pawes. I will speak to Captain Fiddler, kindly said. We'll put the Marines and the Heavies on those posts. No one will mess with them.
Pawes scratched something on his wax ledger, read over what he'd written, and then nodded.
The real mutiny is brewing with the hall teams. That food is killing us. Sure, chewing on dried meat works up some juices, but it's like swallowing a Bedouin cow's afterbirth after it's been 10 days in the sun.
Faridan Sort made a choking sound.
Wall's foot, Pawes. Couldn't you paint a nicer picture?
Pawes raised his eyebrows.
But Fist, I worked on that one all day.
Kindly rose.
This night is going to be a bad one, he said. How many more are we going to lose? We're already staggering like Tlani Mas. Worse than a necromancer's garden party.
Pawes threw in, earning another scowl from Faridan Sort. His smile was weak, and he returned to the wax tablet.
Keep an eye on Blistig's cash, Pawes.
I will, sir.
Kindly left the tent, one wall of which suddenly sagged.
They're folding me up,
Pawes observed, rising from the stool and wincing as he massaged his lower back.
I feel 30 years older.
We all do,
Sort muttered, collecting her gear.
Live with it.
Until I die, sir.
She paused at the tent entrance. Another wall sagged.
You're thinking all wrong, Pawes. There is a way through this. There has to be.
He grimaced. Faith in the adjunct untarnished, then? I envy you, Fist.
I didn't expect you to fold so quickly, she said, eyeing him.
He stored his ledger in a small box and then looked up at her.
Fist, sometime tonight the hall crew will drop the ropes. They'll refuse to drag those wagons one more stride, and we'll be looking at marching on without food. And when that happens, do you understand what it will mean? It will mean we've given up. It'll mean we can't see a way through this. Fist, the bone hunters are about to announce their death sentence. That is what I will have to deal with tonight. Me first, before any of you show up.
So stop it from happening.
He looked at her with bleak eyes.
How?
She found she was trembling.
Guarding the water. Can you do it with just the Marines?
His gaze narrowed on her, and then he nodded. She left him there, in his collapsing tent, and set out through the breaking camp.
Talk to the Heavies, Fiddler. Promise me we can do this. I'm not ready to give up. I didn't survive the wall to die of thirst in a fucking desert.
Blistig glared at Shelemasa for a moment longer, and then fixed his hate-filled eyes on the Cundril horses. He could feel the rage flaring inside him.
You bitch. Look what you're doing to us. All for some war we don't even want. Just kill them,
he commanded. The young woman shook her head. Heat flushed his face.
We can't waste the water on the horses.
We aren't, Fist.
What do you mean?
The horses get our allotted water, Shelemasa said, and we drink from the horses.
He stared, incredulous.
You drink their piss?
No, Fist, we drink their blood.
Gods below. Is it any wonder you all look half dead?
He rubbed at his face, turned away.
Speak the truth, Blistig. It's all you have left. You've had your cavalry charge, Cundril,
he said, watching a troop of Heavies marching past, going the wrong way.
There won't be another, so what's the point?
When he turned back, he saw that she had gone white.
The truth, nobody has to like it. The time has come for hard words, he said. You're done. You've lost your war leader and got an old woman instead, a pregnant one at that. You haven't got enough warriors left to scare a family of berry pickers. She just invited you along out of pity. Don't you see that?
That's enough,
snapped another voice. He turned to see Hanavat standing behind him. Blistig bared his teeth.
I'm glad you heard all that. It needed saying. Kill the damned horses. They're useless.
She studied him with flat eyes.
Fister Blistig, while you hid behind Aran's precious walls, the Wiccans of the Seventh Army fought a battle in a valley, and in that battle they mounted a charge upslope into a wall of the enemy. They won that battle when it seemed they could not. But how? I will tell you. Their shamans had selected a single horse, and with tears in their eyes they fed on its spirit, and when they were done that horse was dead. But the impossible had been achieved, because Coltane expected no less.
I hid behind a fucking wall, did I? I was the garrison commander. Where else would I be?
The adjunct has asked us to preserve our horses, and this we shall do, Fist, because she expects no less from us. If you must object, deliver your complaint to the adjunct. As for you, as you are not the Fist in command of the Cundrill, I tell you now that you are no longer welcome here.
Fine. Go ahead and choke on that blood, then. I spoke out of concern, and in return you do nothing but insult me.
I know the reasons behind your words, Fister Blistig, Hanavat said levelly. He met her eyes, unflinching, and then, shrugging, he said,
The slut speaks.
He turned and left them. As the Fist walked away, Shalamassa drew a shaky breath and stepped close to Hanavat.
Mother?
She shook her head. I am fine, Shalamassa. The fever thirst is on Fist Blistig. That and nothing more.
He said we were done. I will not be pitied, not by anyone. The Cundrill...
The adjunct believes we are still of worth, and so do I.
Now let us tend to our beasts. Do we have enough fodder?
Shalamassa shook herself and then nodded.
More than we need, in fact.
Good. And our water? She winced. Hanavat sighed and then arched her back with a groan.
I'm too old to think of her as my mother, she said, and yet I do. We still breathe, Shalamassa, and we can still walk. For now, that must be enough.
Shalamassa stepped closer as she dared to get.
You have borne children. You have loved a man, many men, truth be told. I thought that one day I could say the same for myself. I thought I could look back and be satisfied.
You don't deserve to die, Shalamassa. I could not agree with you more, and so you shall not. We will do whatever must be done. We will live through this. She cut herself off then, and Shalamassa looked up to see her staring back at the Cundrill camp. She followed the older woman's gaze. Gaul had appeared, and at his side stood Jastara, his eldest son's widow. Shalamassa moved to block Hanavat from their view and then walked over.
War leader,
she hissed.
How many times will you wound her?
The warrior seemed to have aged a dozen years since she had last seen him, but it did nothing to cool her fury, and in his unwillingness to meet her eyes, she saw only cowardice.
We go to our sons this night, he said. Tell her that. I do not mean to wound, tonight or the next. Soon.
Soon,
said Jastara, her tone harsh.
And I will see my husband again. I will walk at his side.
Shalamassa felt disgust twisting her face.
After sleeping with his father? Will you, Jastara? Is his spirit here? Does he see you? Does he know all that you have done? Yet you tell yourself you will be at his side again. You are mad.
A hand settled on her shoulder and she turned.
Hanavat! No. You are so quick to defend me, Shalamassa, and for that I am ever grateful. But I will speak to my husband.
Jastara had backed away at Shalamassa's words, and a moment later she fled, pushing through the crowd that had gathered. A few of the older women spun to strike at her when she rushed past. A dozen youths gathered nearby laughed, and one reached down for a stone.
Belay that, scout!
At the bark, the girl froze. Captain Fiddler was walking into the Cundrill camp to collect his scouts. He glanced over at Gaul, Hanavat, and Shelemassa, and for an instant it seemed he was simply going to continue on to his charges, but then he altered his path and approached.
"No disrespect intended, Mother Hanavat, but we don't have time for all this shit. Your histories are just that, a heap of stories you keep dragging everywhere you go. War leader Gaul, all that doom you're bleating on about is a waste of breath. We're not blind, none of us. The only question you have to deal with now is how are you going to face that end? Like a warrior, or on your hood damned knees?" Then, ignoring the crowd, Fiddler made his way towards his troop. "We're on point this night, scouts. Take up those spears and let's get moving. The column's about to march."
Shelemassa watched the Malazan lead the youths away. From Hanavat, a low laugh, and then,
"No disrespect," he said. And then he went and slapped us all down.
"Mother!"
"No, he was right, Shelemassa. We stand here, naked but for our pride, yet see how heavy it weighs. Well, this night I think I will try to step lighter. After all, what have I left to lose?" "Your child."
As if Hanavat had read her mind, she reached up and brushed Shelemassa's cheek.
"I will die first," she whispered, "and the one within me shall quickly follow. If this is how it must be, then I must accept it, as must we all."
She faced her husband then.
"But not on our knees. We are Cundrill. We are the burned tears."
Gaul said,
"If I had not led us down to Arran, our children would still be alive. I have killed our children, Hanavat. I need you to hate me."
"I know, husband."
Shelemassa could see that beseeching need in Gaul's reddened eyes, but his wife gave him nothing more. He tried again.
"Wife, the burned tears died at the charge."
Hanavat simply shook her head, then took Shelemassa's hand and led her into the camp. It was time to leave. They had to see to the horses. Shelemassa spared one glance back and saw Gaul standing alone, hands covering his face.
"In grief," murmured Hanavat, "people will do anything to escape what cannot be escaped. Shelemassa, you must go to Jastara. You must take back your words."
"I will not."
"It is not for you to judge. Yet how often is it that those in no position to judge are the first to do so, and with such fire and venom? Speak to her, Shelemassa. Help her find some peace."
"But how can I, when just to think of her fills me with disgust?"
"I did not suggest it would be easy, daughter."
"I will give it some thought."
"Very well. Just don't wait too long."
The army lifted into motion like a beast mired in mud. One last exhausted heave forward, weight dragging it down. The wagons lurched behind the teams of haulers as they strapped on their harnesses and took up the ropes. Scores of tents were left standing, along with a scattering of cookpots and soiled clothing lying like trampled flags. Flies roiled in clouds to swarm the hunched-over, silent soldiers, and overhead the glow of the jade strangers was brighter than any moonlight, bright enough for Lostara Yil to see every detail on the painted shields of the regulars, which they now carried to keep the flies from their backs. The lurid green painted drawn, lined faces with a ghastly, corpulent hue, and made unearthly the surrounding desert. Clouds of butterflies wheeled above like ever-building storms. Lostara stood with Henar Vigolf at her side, watching the adjunct draw on her cloak, watching her lifting the hood. She had taken to leading the vanguard herself, 5 or 6 paces ahead of everyone else, excepting Captain Fiddler's 30 or so Cundrill youths who ranged ahead 100 paces, scouts with nothing to scout. Lostara's eyes stayed on the adjunct.
"In Blue Rose," said Henar, "there is a festival of the Black-Winged Lord once every 10 years on winter's longest night. The High Priestess shrouds herself and leads a procession through the city."
"This Black-Winged Lord is your god?"
"Unofficially,
under the suspicious regard of the Lethari. Highly prescribed, in fact. But this procession was one of the few that they did not outlaw.
He was celebrating the year's longest night?
Not really. Not in the fashion that farmers might each winter to celebrate the coming of the planting season. Very few farms around Blue Rose. We were mostly seafaring. Well, maritime, anyway. It was meant to summon our god, I suppose. I was not much for making sense of such things. And as I said, it was once every 10 years. Lastara waited. Henar wasn't a talkative man, thank Hood. But when he spoke, he always had something useful to say, eventually. Hooded, she'd walk silent streets, followed by thousands equally mute, down to the water's edge. She would stand just beyond the reach of the surf. An acolyte would come up to her carrying a lantern, which she would take in one hand. And at the moment of dawn's first awakening, she would fling that lantern into the water, quenching its light. Lastara grunted.
Curious ritual. Instead of the lantern, then, the sun. Sounds like you were worshipping the coming of day more than anything else.
Then she would draw a ceremonial dagger and cut her own throat.
Shaken, Lostara Yil faced him, but found she had nothing to say. No response seemed possible. Then a thought struck her. And that was a festival the Lethari permitted?
They would come down and watch, picnicking on the strand. He shrugged. For them, it was one less irritating high priestess, I suppose.
Her gaze returned to the adjunct. She had just set out, a shrouded figure hidden from all behind her by that plain hood. The soldiers fell in after her, and the only sound that came from them was the dull clatter of their armor, the thump of their boots. Lastara Yil shivered and leaned close to Henar.
The hood, Henar muttered. It reminded me, that's all.
She nodded, but she dreaded the thought of that story coming back to haunt them.
I can't believe I died for this,
Hedge said, wanting to spit, but there wasn't enough in his mouth to do it, and of course he'd have to be mad to waste the water. He turned and glared at the three oxen pulling Bevedik's carriage.
Got any more of that drink you gave him? They're looking damned hale, Alchemist. We could all do with a sip or three.
Hardly, Commander, Bevedik said, one hand on the hawser. They've been dead for 3 days now.
Hedge squinted at the nearest beast.
Well, now, I'm impressed, I admit it. Impressed, and that can't be said often of old Hedge.
In Letheras, Bevedik said, there are dozens of people wandering around who are in fact dead and have been for some time. Necromantic alchemy is one of the most advanced of the uneasy arts among the Lethari. In fact, of all the curse elixirs I sold, the one achieving everlasting undeath was probably the most popular. As much as anything costing a chestful of gold can be popular.
Could you do this for a whole army?
Bevedik blanched.
Commander, such things are prohibitively difficult to achieve. Preparing a single curse vial, for example, involves months of back-breaking effort. Denatured Utulu spawn, the primary ingredient. Well, you'd be lucky to get 3 drops a night, and harvesting is terribly risky. Not to mention exhausting, even for a man reputedly as skilled as myself.
Ulatu spawn, huh? Never heard of it. Never mind, then. It was just a notion. But you got any more of that stuff?
No, sir. I judged as greatest the need of the bridge burners for the munitions in this carriage.
Shh! Don't use that word, you fool!
Sorry, sir. Perhaps, then, we should invent some other term. Something innocuous that we could use freely.
Hedge rubbed at his whiskered jaw.
Good idea. How about kittens?
Kittens, sir? Why not? Now then, our carriage full of kittens is not something that can be abandoned, is it, sir? And I should tell you, the entire company of bridge burners has not the strength to haul it.
Really? Well, just how many kittens you got stuffed in there?
It's the raw ingredients, sir. Bottles and casks and vials and, tubing. Condensers, distillation apparatuses. Without two cats of opposite gender, sir, making kittens is not an easy venture.
Hedge stared for a moment and then nodded.
Oh, ah, of course, alchemist. Just so.
He glanced to his right, where a squad of marines had just come up alongside them, but their attention was on the wagon loaded with food and water that they were guarding. Or so Hedge assumed, since they were resting hands on hilts and looking belligerent.
Well, keep at it then, Bavedict. Never can have too many kittens, can we?
Precisely, sir.
6 paces behind the two men, Rum Jugs leaned close to Sweet Lard.
I had me some kittens once, you know.
Sweet Lard shot her an unsurprised look.
Errant knows you'll take coin from anybody, love. He had a swagger, I remember that much, and how I'd get sick, my stomach burning like I'd swallowed coals every time he came into the house. Ma, she was a bird, really, the kind that flits about as if no branch gives comfort, no leaf makes perfect shade, and her eyes would leap to him and then away again. But in that one look, she'd know if something bad was on the way. If it was, she'd edge closer to me. The jay is in the tree, the chick is in danger. But there was nothing she could do. He weighed twice as much as she did. He once threw her through the shack's flimsy wall. That time was something of a mistake for old Da, since it took outside what went on inside, so people saw the truth of it all. My little family. There must have been a neighbour, someone on the street, who'd seen and decided he didn't much like it. A day later, Da was dragged back to the house, beaten close to death. And there we were, Ma and her two boys. That was before my brother ran away. There we were, nursing him back. How stupid was that? We should have finished what that right-thinking neighbour had started, but we didn't. That swagger and Ma darting about. I remember the last day of all that. I was 7, almost 8. Quiet Ginnance, who lived up the street and worked as a knife sharpener, had been found strangled in the alley behind his shop. People were upset. Ginnance had been solid, an old veteran of the Fallah Wars, and though he had a weakness for drink, he wasn't a violent drunk, not at all. Too much ale, and he wanted to seduce every woman he saw. A sweet soul, then. That's what Ma used to say, hands fluttering like wings. So people were upset. He'd been drunk the night before, in no shape to defend himself. The rope that had killed him was horsehair. I remember how people talked about that, as if it was important, though I didn't know why at the time. But they'd found horsehairs in Gin's neck. The old women who shared a house on the corner, 3 of them, seemed to be looking at us again and again. We were outside, listening to everybody talking, all those emotions running high. Ma was white as plucked down. Da was on the bench beside the shack's door. He'd gotten a rash on his hands and was slowly melting a lump of lard between them. There'd been a strange look in his eye, but for once he wasn't offering any opinion on the matter. Horsehair, a tradition among the outliers, the wood-cutting camps east of the city. How adulterers are hung, aye? And the old women nodded. But old Ginnance, he ain't never. No, couldn't, ye see. Got burned down there. Was on a ship that caught fire when they took Fallah Harbour. He couldn't do nothing. The drunk seducer with nowhere to take it. How shit-fouled miserable is that? Breaks the heart. And he'd always a kind word for Ma, when she went to him to get the one knife we owned sharpened. Hardly charged a thing, either. That blade a mouse couldn't shave with. Ha! Hey, boy, your Ma ever let you shave a mouse? Good practice for when one shows up under your nose. Few years yet, though. So, said someone in the crowd, a jealous man. No, make it a jealous, stupid man. With wood for brains. And a few people laughed, but they weren't pleasant laughs. People were working up to something. People knew something. People were figuring it out. Like a bird in a thorn bush, Ma slipped inside without a sound. I followed her, thinking about poor old Ginaints and wondering who was going to sharpen Ma's knife now. But Da got up right then and went in a step before me. His hands were dripping melted fat. I don't remember exactly what I saw, just a flash, really. Up close to Da's face, just under his huge bearded jaw. And he made a gurgling sound and his knees bent as if he was about to sit down, right on me. I jumped back, tripped in the doorway and landed in the dust beside the bench. Da was making spitting sounds, but not from his mouth, from his neck. And when he landed on his knees, twisting round in the doorway as if wanting to come back outside, the front of his chest was all wet and bright red. I looked into my father's eyes, and for the first and only time in my life with him, I actually saw something alive in there. A flicker, a gleam, that went out for good as he slumped on the threshold. Behind him, Ma stood holding that little knife in her right hand. Here you go, boy. Hold it careful now. It's sharp enough to shave a mouse. Bridge-burner magic, what I can do with decent iron. Give us another smile, sweet Elaide. It's all the payment I ask, darling. Well now, recruit, you ever stand still? Seen you going round and round and round. Tell me, was your old man a court clown or something? No, Master Sergeant, my Da was a woodcutter. Really? Outlier blood? But you're a scrawny thing for a woodcutter's son. Not one for the trade, then? He died when I was 7, Master Sergeant. I was of no mind to follow his ways. I ended up learning most from my Ma's side of the family. Had an aunt and uncle who worked with animals. Found you a name, lad, Master Sergeant? See, I wrote it right here, making it official. Your name is Widdershins, and you're now a Marine. Now get out of my sight and get someone to beat those dogs. That barking's driving me mad.
How's the stomach, Wid?
Burns like coal, Sergeant.
A half dozen regulars were coming up alongside them. The one in the lead eyed Barm and said,
Fist Blistig have signed us to this one, Sergeant. We got it in hand.
Best under a blanket, Corporal, said Barm.
Throat Slitter piped an eerie laugh, and the squad of regulars jumped at the sound.
Your help's always welcome, Barm added, but from now on these wagons got details of Marines to help guard 'em.
The Corporal looked nervous enough for Widdershins to give him a closer look.
Now that's an awfully plump face for someone on 3 tiny cups a day.
The Corporal was stubborn or stupid enough to try again.
Fist Blistig, ain't commanding Marines, Corporal. But tell you what, go to him and tell him all about this conversation, why don't you? If he's got a problem, he can come to me. I'm Sergeant Barm, 9th Squad. Or, if I rank too low for him on all this, why, he can hunt down Captain Fiddler, who's up ahead on point.
Barm cocked his head and scratched his jaw.
Seem to recall from my basic training days that a fist outranks a captain. Hey, dead smell, is that right?
Mostly, Sergeant, but sometimes, well, it depends on the fist.
And the captain,
added Throat Slitter, nudging Widdershins with a sharp elbow.
Now there's a point, Barm mused. Kind of sticky, like a hand under a blanket.
Throat Slitter's second laugh sent them scurrying.
Those soldiers looked flush,
Widdershins muttered once they'd retreated into the gloom.
At first, well, the poor fools were just following orders, so I thought you was being unkind, Sergeant, but now I got some suspicions.
That's an executable offence, said Deadsmell. What you're suggesting there, Wid?
It's going to happen soon, if it hasn't already,
Widdershins said, grimacing.
We all know it. Why do you think Fid nailed us to these wagons?
Throat Slitter added,
Heard we was getting our heavies for this,
But then we weren't. Nervous, Throaty?
Widdershins asked.
Only the four of us, after all. The scariest thing about us is your awful laugh. Worked, though, didn't it?
They went to moan at their captain or whoever, Balm said. They'll be back with reinforcements, is my guess. Widdershins jabbed Throat Slitter with his elbow, avenging that earlier prod.
Scared, Throaty?
Only of your breath, Wid. Get away from me.
Got another squad on the other side of these wagons, Balm pointed out. Anyone see which one? They all looked over, but the three lines of wretched haulers mostly blocked their view. Throat Slitter grunted.
Could be Whiskey Jack himself. If we get in trouble, they won't be able to get through.
What's your problem? Balm demanded. Throat Slitter bared his teeth.
This is thirst we're dealing with here, Sergeant. No, all of you. Where I came from, droughts hit often, and the worst was when the city was besieged. And with Li Heng, well, during the scraps with the city, that was pretty much every summer. So I know about thirst, all right. Once the fever strikes, there's no stopping it.
Well, isn't that cheery? You can stop talking now, Throat Slitter, and that's an order.
I think it's Badan Grook's squad, said Deadsmell. Balm snorted. Widdershins frowned.
That's a problem, Sergeant? They're Dalhanese just like you, aren't they?
Don't be an idiot. They're from the southern jungles.
So are you, aren't you?
Even if I was, and I'm not saying I wasn't, or was, that'd make no difference. You understand me, Wid?
No. Taisren himself couldn't have worked out what you just said, Sergeant.
It's complicated, that's all, but Badan Grook. Well, could be worse, I suppose. Though, like Throaty said, we'd both have trouble supporting the other. I wish Fid ain't pulled the heavies from us. What do you think he's done with them? Deadsmell said.
It was Faradan Thought who come up after kindly to talk to the captain, and I wasn't deliberately eavesdropping or nothing. I just happened to be standing close, so I didn't catch it all, but I think there might be some trouble with the food haulers on the back end. I'm thinking that's where the heavies went.
What, to lighten the loads? Throat Slitter yelped.
Laptwell scratched at the end of his nose where the tip had once been.
Kind of insulting, he muttered. Them calling themselves bridge burners.
Burnt Rope glanced over at the company marching on his left, squinted at the three oxen plodding the way oxen plodded the world over.
It's how it looks when you get someone doing something nobody wants to do. Draft animals. Of course, it's all down to stupidity, isn't it? Do the work, get food, do more work to get more food. Over and over again. Not like us at all. I don't care what they call themselves, Lap. They're marching just like us, in the same mess. And when we're all bleached bones, well, who could tell the difference between any of us?
I could. Laptwell said. Easy. Just by looking at the skulls. I can tell if it's a woman or a man, young or old. I can tell if it's a city-born fool or a country one. Where I apprenticed back in Falar, my master had shelves and shelves of skulls. Was doing a study. He could tell a Napan from a Kwan, a Jenabakan from a Cartulian.
Corporal Clasp, walking a step ahead, snorted loudly and then half-turned.
And you believed him, Lap? Let me guess, that's how he made his living, isn't it? Wasn't it you, Falari, who had that thing about burying relatives in the walls of your houses? So when rival claims to some building came up, why, everyone ran to the skull scryers.
My master was famous for settling disputes.
I just bet he was. Listen, working out a man or woman, old or young, sure, I'll buy that. But the rest? Forget it, Lap.
Why are we talking about skulls again?
Burnt Rope asked. When no one seemed able to come up with an answer, he went on.
Anyway, I'm thinking it's all right that we got them bridge burners so close instead of them regulars. If we get mobbed at this wagon here, we could call on them to help.
Why would they do that?
Laptwell demanded.
Can't say, but Deadhedge, he's a real bridge burner.
Yeah.
Drawled Clasp.
I heard that too.
Pure rubbish, you know. They're all dead. Everyone knows that.
Not Fiddler.
Except Fiddler.
And Fiddler and Hedge were in the same squad, along with Quick Ben. So Hedge is for real.
All right, fine. So it isn't pure rubbish. But him helping us is. We get in trouble here, we got no one else to look to for help. Tar's squad is on the other side of the haulers. No way to reach us. So just stay sharp, especially when the midnight bell sounds.
From ahead of them all, Sergeant Erb had glanced back.
Everyone relax, he said. There won't be any trouble.
What makes you so sure, Sergeant?
Because, Corporal Clasp, we got bridge burners marching beside us, and they got kittens.
Burnt Rope joined the others in solemn nodding. Erb knew his stuff. They were lucky to have him. Even with salt licks sent off back column, they would be fine. Burnt Rope glanced enviously at that huge, leathery carriage.
Wish I had me some of them kittens.
If anything, letting go was the easiest among all the choices left. The other choices crowded together, jostling and unpleasant, and stared with belligerent expressions, waiting, expectant. And he so wanted to turn away from them all. He so wanted to let go. Instead, the captain just walked, his scouts whispering around him like a score of childhood memories. He didn't want them around, but he couldn't send them away either. It was what he was stuck with. It's what we're all stuck with. And so there was no letting go, not from any of this. He knew what the adjunct wanted, and what she wanted of him. And my marines, and my heavies. And none of it's fair, and we both know it. And that's not fair either. Those other choices, willing him to meet their eye, stood before him like an unruly legion.
Take us, Fiddler. We're all that you meant to say 1,000 times in your life, when you looked on and remained silent, when you let it all slide past instead of taking a step right into the path of all that shit, all that cruel misery, when you let it go, and felt bits of you die inside, small ones. Barely a sting, and then gone. But they add up, soldier, don't they? So she says, don't let go this time, don't sidestep. She says, well, you know what she says.
Fiddler wasn't surprised that the chiding voice within him, the voice of those hardened choices ahead, was Whiskey Jack's. He could almost see his sergeant's eyes, blue and grey, the colour of honed weapons, the colour of winter skies, fixing upon him that knowing look, the one that said, you'll do right, soldier, because you don't know how to do anything else.
Doing right, soldier, is the only thing you're good at.
And if it hurts,
too bad. Stop your bitching, Fid. Besides, you ain't as alone as you think you are.
He grunted. Now where had that thought come from? No matter. It was starting to look like the whole thing was useless. It was starting to look like this desert was going to kill them all. But until then, he'd just go on and on, walking. Walking. A small, grubby hand tugged at his jerkin. He looked down. The boy pointed ahead. Walking. Fiddler squinted, shapes in the distance, figures appearing out of the darkness. Walking.
God's below. He whispered,
walking.